జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య నిత్యానంద సహోదితో గౌడదే పుష్పవంతో చిత్రౌషందో తమోనదో ఉగ్రోప్యనుగ్రహే వాయం సుభక్తానాం యకేశ్వరి కేశరి వసుపోతానాం అన్యేషామగ్ర విక్రమ. హరే కృష్ణ. సో టుడే ఐ వాజ్ హోపింగ్ టు స్పీక్ ఆన్ ది పాస్ట్ టైమ్ దట్ ఈస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ ఇన్ ది 10th క్యాంటో of the Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Krishna along with Arjun, they visit Mahavishnu and get back from him the sons that belong to a Brahmana in Dwaraka. So this was like the first time in the history of mankind ever a trip has been taken beyond the universe by a living entity who was within the universe. And the entire episode ultimately so very astonishing that Arjuna, who is a living entity, is amazed by the whole experience. Because not every day one goes beyond the universe. And that too, Arjuna did not make plans. He did not have sufficient money, in fact, also. And he wasn't sure whether he had the requisite visa and passport details also. And all of a sudden it just took place. So he was very much amazed. Oftentimes, devotees meet someone who would put forward the query, especially in India. And I would like you to respond after you hear the incident as to whether you have also experienced it or not. I have experienced it quite a few times. Why did all the incarnations come in India only? Yes? Have you ever heard this before? Many people sometimes ask, why in India only all the incarnations came? So it is either out of frustration, because in the other countries God never came, so they have their own laws. In India you are burdened with the fact that he appeared and gave his laws. So why did he come to India? And secondly, seeing the present situation of India, everyone wonders, what is there in India that God comes here? Everyone in India is trying to go to the West. What is it? Krishna did not get the, you know, he was ordered by the American authorities, you cannot enter. So he had to come back, deported. Therefore he came to India. So as many reasons as may be there, Srila Prabhupada explains that this attitude, especially when there is a rebellious mood to it, or there is a query which arises from frustration and not a sufficient desire to actually understand God. It is just a lazy, inquisitive query. Or actually someone is really frustrated with God, angry with him maybe. Why he came? So many a times I have found this answer to be very useful. Practically all the number of times. I don't know about you, but as far as I am concerned, I feel very fortunate that I was born in the land where God came so many times. I am so fortunate that I've got a chance to appear and take steps on the very land that has been blessed by so many incarnations. So this concept about God and the fight, the duel that we have with Him. Because every living entity in this world is essentially envious of Krishna, except a few. Who are those exceptional people, those exception to the rule? They come here either to save conditioned souls or just to purify the atmosphere they are here. In general, 99.99% of all of us are here because of this fight that we have with God. Bhagavad Gita succinctly, Krishna explains this as Ichha Dvesha Samutthena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sarge Yanti Parantapa. So because of this envy, which essentially means we have a fight with God, this whole material creation is existing and we are in it. So on the path of reformation or on the path of trying to ultimately understand God, because everyone will be forced to accept there is some power in this world, superior power or some control. They call it nowadays intelligent design. So this pathway on trying to understand God is oftentimes plagued with two types of behavior, which are both very dangerous. The first behavior is an attempt. Behavioral characteristic is an attempt to try to raise oneself to the platform of God. The desire to be as powerful as God is so predominant that even if one characteristic where one is able to do something that can qualify oneself as God for 1 minute, then one is looking for that opportunity. Any one quality, Krishna's or God's qualities. So this is one behavioral characteristic that is there. One tries to raise oneself to the platform of God, which is not possible and it is practically not very satisfying. Prabhupada, he explains that what is this you want to try to become God or try to be as good as God? Because when you try to be as good as God and you go to his house and say, hey, look, I am also here, you find that he is not there. Where is he? He's gone to serve his servants. So why do you want to become God when God himself is trying to serve his servants? Become a servant of the servant of God. That is a better proposal. Isn't it? Like this person who was number two in the world, tried for many years to be number one in terms of how much cash, liquid as well as assets one had. The richest person in the world. And for a moment when the stock prices slightly changed, he became for a few minutes and was so happy. Supposing even that happens, Srila Prabhupada says, what is the use? Because when you go and see God in his residence, he's not there. Where is he? He's busy trying to serve his servants. He's either trying to make arrangements to bring all the living entities back, or he's, you know, trying to have nice pastimes with his devotees, taking them on his shoulders. So many ways. So we made an attempt to become as good as God, and let's say for the sake of argument that we did so. It is so frustrating because when you go there, you find that actually God actually serves his servants. You thought God is someone who makes his servants serve him. And then you find out God actually serves his servants. And that is more frustrating. So this is one attribute that could be very disturbing when one is trying to understand Krishna. And the second attribute, which is much more dangerous, is try to bring down Krishna to our level. We cannot do that. So try to say, after all, who was he? A cowherd boy. You know, or Lord Ram's pastimes, 14 years of Vanvas. You know, even I do not, I am never tadipar for so much time. Never had that. And he was 14 years in the forest. So just an ordinary person. He had his lucky arrow one day. And sometimes it's just like someone has a lucky day, 4 Olympic gold medals, never to be repeated again by him or her like that. So maybe Ram had his lucky day, you know. One lucky hour he had in Janasthan when he killed 14,000 Rakshasas in 1 hour, within an hour. Completely routed them. This was the first time that Ravana actually heard of him. Or maybe once, you know, Krishna just had his lucky day at the age of 7. He just lifted the Govardhan hill on his left hand. One of the lucky draws. Otherwise, you see, he's stealing butter. He's playing with monkeys. His mother scolds him for eating dirt. Ordinary man. I am better than him. My mother never scolded me for eating dirt. I was living in a palace. Never saw dirt. So these two things. And the only way that these viruses that contaminate the hard drive of a spiritual life totally, the only way they can be removed is by listening to the pastimes which describe the glory of Krishna. And therefore so much effort has been taken by these great saints like Srila Prabhupada to, he made such an endeavor to present all of these pastimes in a language that we understand. So the 10th canto, these are the concluding chapters of the 10th canto. And this particular pastime is the second to the last chapter. And the flow is that in the 86th chapter, 90th chapter is the last concluding chapter. In the 86th chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, you kidnap Subhadra and marry her. Now, the whole chapter-wise description of Krishna's pastimes is so wonderful. Vrindavan pastimes, Mathura pastimes, Dwarka pastimes. Then sometimes when he was in Dwarka, he went to Hastinapur, he went to Mithila. So this chapter, it describes how Krishna, he instigated Arjuna by saying, hey Arjun, Balaramji has some different ideas, but you kidnap my sister. Arjuna is saying, my God, I have not forgotten the message of the Gita. Vinashaya cha duskritam. And you've told me to boldly declare, right, that I come and establish religion. And you're telling me to kidnap. Now, Arjuna had never kidnapped anyone ever in his life. He was a straightforward person. He was upright. The best of the Kshatriyas. The only embarrassing moment in his life was when 1 year he had to spend as a hidden person. That was all. So he was really in a crisis. And just imagine, Parikshit Maharaj has been told all these pastimes. And Krishna, and after this, the pastimes of Krishna practically are where Krishna is directly involved. Stop. This is one of the final pastimes that Krishna directly performs during the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyone, Parikshit Maharaj was well established, but it is quite possible that someone, after hearing this incident, may again wonder, is this really God? And after hearing all the 10th cantos, 1 to 10 cantos on the 6th day, if a question like that comes in the mind of Parikshit, what could happen? So Krishna is telling, steal Subhadra. And Subhadra is kidnapped and gets married. And Balaram gets wild. Shri Balaramji. And Krishna pacifies him and says, "No, no, don't worry, it's all right. After all, he is our relative only." You know, like someone says in Hindi, "Ghar ka saman ghar mein gaya." You know, a household article has passed on to another person of an extended household. That's all, no problem. So, then, 87th chapter is a chapter where prayers are offered by the personified Vedas. And it is just a complete, concentrated, philosophical presentation of the supreme position of Krishna. Total philosophy. Just imagine the Vedas are speaking. And the Vedas just glorify all the aspects of Krishna. However, the Vedas can describe Krishna only in a hidden manner, with only a few direct references. So the 87th chapter establishes again that Krishna, as his expansion of Lord Vishnu, is the supreme. Then the 88th chapter describes how again Krishna is superior to Lord Shiva and therefore the other demigods also. Where in the pastime of Lord Shiva being saved from Vrikasur is described. In the 89th chapter, the beginning, the further establishment of Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan as the supreme is being given when the sages, they sit down on the banks of the river Saraswati one fine day and they are wondering, who is the greatest and the best of all the personalities? Is it Brahma? Is it Maheshwar, Lord Shiva? Or is it Krishna? So they appoint Bhrigu Muni, you go. So Bhrigu Muni goes and he does his various tests. Please don't ever try to repeat those tests in any laboratory. You know, generally, most of us, we are intelligent class of people, most of you, excepting me. Therefore, the desire to repeat an experiment is always there, isn't it? So if someone may get inspired by Bhrigu Muni, let me also go and chastise Brahma, you know. Within the mind, I will also go and call him so many names. Let me see if he gets angry. Could be dangerous. And especially if you approach Shiva and call him, "What are you, don't embrace me." You look as if you've just come from the crematorium. "When was the last time you took bath?" Bhrigu Muni asked him, "You may be a brother, but tell me, when was the last time you took bath?" Now, this question should be very properly understood. Lord Shiva takes bath every day. However, just to attract the hobgoblins and the ghouls and the ghosts and the others, he outwardly applies ashes from the crematorium. And in some ways it is non-different from today's face powders. Because ultimately all the talcum powders and all the fair and lovelies and handsomes, they get their potassium and they get their all their chemicals from urea and bones only. So Lord Shiva applies it in its unrefined form. Because he wants to show to us ultimately what are we doing. And we have a refinery set up, which ultimately pollutes us and pollutes the atmosphere. So here Bhrigu Muni does that. And then when he goes to Krishna, to Lord Narayan, he already has some idea. This Narayan is someone different from these two. So I have to use a better litmus test. And he goes and kicks him hard. You know, sometimes devotees do drama and they have to kick another devotee. They like, just touch him. Or they make arrangements, "Prabhu, I'll put some dhoti on you so that my..." So Bhrigu Muni is also a devotee. And Krishna is a supreme personality of Godhead. But he's not doing a drama. He has to establish a point. So he goes and kicks him hard. And Krishna jumps up. And such a reaction would generally entail a severe repercussions, severe blow. But Krishna just holds his feet and says, Lord Narayana holds his feet and says, oh, your feet are so soft. My chest is so hard. Your feet, there must have been so many fractures. If not gross, at least hairline. And then Bhrigumuni comes back and says, my God, this person is amazing. Even when I physically offended him. Physical offense is the worst of all the three offenses. Because it clearly shows that you hate someone. It clearly shows that you envy someone. A mental offense or an offense of spoken words may not necessarily seem like that. You know, mental offense, nobody comes to know. Vocal offense, after some time you can say, I did not say like that. You know, politicians, so many times they just change. Actually, what I meant to say was something else. But a physical offense, you cannot say, actually, I did not hit him. My hand hit him. I did not. You can't say that. So Bhrigumuni comes back and says to all the sages, Vishnu is the supreme. So 89th chapter, the beginning establishes Vishnu as the supreme, Lord Narayan as the supreme. But then the 10th chapter has to conclude by establishing Krishna as the supreme amongst all the incarnations, amongst all the expansions. And therefore, this pastime is narrated at the end of the 10th canto. And Sridhar Swami Maharaj, the great commentator on the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that although this pastime took place even before the Kurukshetra war, still it is narrated towards the end to establish the fact of the Ashray Tattva. Everything else is the Vishaya Tattva or the dependent Tattva. There's only one independent truth. The Ashray Tattva, Krishna. Eko Bahunam Yovidhati Kaman, as stated in the Upanishad, Shweta Shutara and the Mundaka. This is one personality on whom everyone depends, and he independently exists forever. He doesn't depend on anything at any time, any place, under any circumstance. So that is the Ashray Tattva. And that Ashray Tattva is re-established again towards the end of the Bhagavatam through this pastime. So, Suta Goswami, as we know, it is he who is being asked by the sages at Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka Muni, please glorify, tell us that particular which scriptures should be understood and which is the best path to be followed for satisfaction, for the soul, for self-realization. And he narrates what he has heard from his guru Shukdev Maharaj. So time and again, Suta Goswami will refer back and say, Sri Shuka Uvach. He'll again and again say, my guru Maharaj said. And this is a good qualification. This is one of the prominent qualifications of a sincere disciple. He always says, my guru Maharaj said. Srila Prabhupada, he would say, actually, everything is happening by the mercy of Srila Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Siddhant Goswami Maharaj, my guru Maharaj. I am simply an instrument in his hands. It is his desire. And often he would quote, my Guru Maharaj said. Many times if we read Srila Prabhupada's purport and if we have an access to the purports of Bhakti Siddhant Saraswati Thakur, many times we'll find they are being repeated as it is. In fact, some purports to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one or two, are as it is repeated by Srila Prabhupada. And this is one of the prominent qualifications of a sincere disciple. Yes, we may try to present our understanding according to the, on the basis of what the previous acharyas have given, but time and again we have to present the words as it is of the previous acharyas. So here, Suta Goswami, he says, Shri Shuka Uvacha. But before he can say Shri Shuka Uvacha or what my Guru Maharaj has said, Suta Goswami, he cannot stop himself from glorifying Shukadeva Maharaj, his Guru Maharaj. And he says, Shri Suta Uvacha, Itte tan muni tanayasa padmagandha piyusham bhava bhaya bhita parasya pungsa sushlokam shravana pute pibanti bhikshnam pantho dhva brahmana parishamam jahati. So Suta Goswami says, Itte etam muni tanayasya. He says, my Guru Maharaj is such an exalted personality that I cannot even take his name and say directly Shukadev. Shukadev Goswami. Because Shukadev Goswami describes only one particular characteristic of his, that he is such a wonderful speaker on the Bhagavad. When he speaks, the Bhagavatam becomes more relishable. Just as when one eats a fruit eaten by a parrot, that fruit is much more sweet. Shuka means parrot. So my Guru Maharaj is Shukadev Maharaj. What when he speaks, his words are so sweet. But the very word Shukadev only explains his qualifications in this way. And that is definitely great. However, he is Muni Tanaya. He is the wonderful son of Vyasadev. Who is Vyas? The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is Vyasadev, the person who has compiled all the Vedic literatures. Who is Vyasadev? He is the guru of so many acharyas. And who is Sukadev Maharaj? Tanaya. Now, Tanay, there are many words which indicate a child, a son. But Tanay means someone who is very, very delicately attractive. Someone for whom you feel great care and love. So it says, this Muni Tanay, Shukadev Maharaj, Itte etam Padma Gandha Piyusham. His narration is like nectar which has been embellished with the fragrance of lotus flowers. Nowadays, lotus flowers hardly are there, and when they are there, all we can do is take the essence out of it and bottle them and present it. Put it in some drink and say, lotus drink. Right? But the original essence, the original fragrance of fully blossomed lotuses, we can only understand from the Bhagavatam. It is so aromatic. So already, Shukadev Maharaj is giving nectar. And this verse is so nice. And this nectar has been embellished with the fragrance of lotuses. Padma Gandha. By the fragrance of Padma. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives this understanding. He says, what is nectar? What does nectar mean? Nectar is amrit. What is the meaning of amrit? Amrit means the opposite of mrit. You know, just supposing a vaiva is going on, you know, and the person, the examiner is asking the question, and the answerer is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Maharaj. He is a person who is sitting across the table being asked questions. So the question is asked, what is nectar? He says, nectar is amrit. What is amrit? Amrit is the opposite of mrit. So obviously, what is the next question going to be? Yeah, you all are the questioners, but I am not Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But however, I can repeat his words. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, mrit means that which is dying, death, which is not very attractive. So amrit means some things that can defy death. So nectar is something that can take us from death to deathlessness. So itya etam, this pastime, this narration that is coming from Muni Tanay, from Shukdev Maharaj, son of Vyas Muni, it is nectar for those who are being troubled by this world of illusion, which ultimately only leads to death. Those who are traversing, they are on the path of their material life, time and again are faced with death. And one day, death is going to conquer. The only solution to this is if we can get nectar from somewhere, amrit from somewhere. So where is the nectar going to come from? Sut Maharaj says, here. This is the nectar from Shukdev Goswami. So itteta munitanayasya padmagandha piyusham. So piyusham is the nectar. And padmagandha, why, what is the understanding of padmagandha? So nectar is all right for those who are enmeshed in material life because they need the nectar. But then we are devotees, aren't we? All of us are devotees. Now for devotees, it is already assured that there is deathlessness. Right? We are all assured that having once chanted the name of Krishna, death will not come to us. We are already on the path of immortality unless and until we take some detour. If, as long as we don't take some detour, we are on the path of deathlessness. We are going to reach immortal life. So, as far as devotees are concerned, nectar, no nectar, doesn't matter. Srimad Bhagavatam, we are going to listen. So therefore, he says, Padma Gandha, it has got the aromatic flavor of the lotuses. Now, lotus, its aroma, it is life-giving. So devotees have been described as bees. And the pastimes of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam is described as lotus. Where do bees go to? They go towards the lotus. So the bee-like devotees, they relish the nectar which is having the fragrance of lotuses in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So for the bee-like devotees, they're not very much concerned with death or no death. Like he says, let that snake-like bird come and bite me, I don't care, Parikshit Maharaj says. Because that is now no longer a concern. However, the sweet nectarian pastimes of Krishna should never stop. Because bees are interested in going and getting the nectar, the honey from the lotus flowers. So, Sushlokam Shravana Putai Pibanta Bhikshnam. Sushlokam, this glorious pastimes, this glorious description, Shravana Putai. He says these holes are meant for Shravana. Holes are, you know, there are holes so many where, so many places. Doorways have holes, you put in the key and open the door. Grounds have holes, worms and sometimes snakes live in those holes. However, these holes are not meant for insects. These holes are not meant for snakes to reside in. These holes that we possess on either sides, as long as they are functioning nicely, we should be very grateful and use it for the purpose that it is meant for, Shravana. And what should we hear? These nectarian pastimes. How? Abhikshanam. Without any break. Incessantly. Pantho adhva brahmana parishramam jahati. And if somehow or the other we can at least for some period of time incessantly hear about the pastimes of Krishna, as Gauranga Prabhu was saying, there are occasionally some days in this 365 days of the calendar, there are few days where one gets a chance, an opportunity
to incessantly hear about the pastimes of Krishna, to incessantly glorify Krishna, to incessantly chant the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. This is such an opportunity. And to top it all, there's going to be Mahaprasad. So, abhikshanam, any effort rendered in Krishna consciousness is never lost. It saves us from the greatest danger. So, panthodhva, just like a traveler after traveling to so many places, he comes weary at the end of the day. And someone offers him some water. Someone offers him some place to rest. And he's so relieved. Similarly, after so much trouble in the material world, when a devotee gets a chance to hear the nectar and pastimes of Krishna, it is such a great relief. The burning desire, the conflagration of this material universe is so intense. And when the nectar and showers of Krishna's pastimes are there, one feels so relieved. Especially when we hear it from Suta Goswami's mouth or from the mouth of Srila Prabhupada in the form of his pastimes, in the form of his purports. So after this, Suta Goswami then starts narrating. He says, Sri Shukadev Maharaj says, once upon a time in Dwarka, there was a particular Brahmana living with his wife. The Brahmana's wife gave birth to a son. As soon as the son was born, he cried for some time. But then the son died as soon as he was put on the ground. Yes, a child is born. The midwife or the doctor or anyone who's assisting the birth lifts the newborn infant and puts it beside the mother on the ground. Here, as soon as the child was put on the ground, the child died. When the Brahmana saw this event, he became so agitated. The Brahmana took the dead corpse of his son and walked all the way to King Ugrasena's court, who was a king of Dwarka, and put the dead body at the door of his court. And in an agitated voice and lamenting miserably, he spoke the following words. The Brahmana said, "This duplicitous, greedy enemy of the Brahmanas, this unqualified ruler addicted to sense pleasure, has caused my son's death by some discrepancies in the execution of his duties." The Brahmana says, "Brahmadvisha shatadhyo lubdhasya vishayatmana chatrabandho." Now, the verse after this, the Brahmana is going to be described as a wise and learned Brahman. Now, someone who is learned and wise, the wise Brahmana, just suppose the translation goes like this, and the wise and learned Brahmana said, "This duplicitous, greedy enemy of the Brahmanas, this unqualified ruler, this Chhatrabandhava, someone, a relative of real Kshatriyas, that it does not seem to be, it seems to be a person who is not really wise, because a wise person does not get agitated in this way." However, Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book gives an understanding. He says, "Brahmadisha," this word means someone who is envious of the Vedas. A person who is envious of the Vedas, a person who is envious of a Brahmana, or a person who is envious of the Brahman caste itself is called a Brahmadvish. Now, Ugrasena Maharaj does not have any of these qualities. He is not a Brahmadvish. In fact, he honors and respects Brahmanas, taking the dust from their feet, and every day he puts it on his head and then goes to his court. Srila Prabhupada says why this is taking place, and he
quotes from Chakravarti Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. He says, previously, there were kings ruling over the citizens. Nowadays, there may be kings, but they don't rule. They are just there because the king has to be there. We like a king and a queen, so they are there. But they cannot rule anymore. But previously, there were kings who ruled over the citizens of their state. And it was the responsibility of the kings to see to the comforts of their citizens. And the responsibility of the kings, it went to such an extent that the comforts of the citizens should be met in regards to. And one point Srila Prabhupada says is, there should be not too much heat or too much cold. When I read the statement of Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, then I understood why we need ACs nowadays. Why people need so much adjustments, because they complain there's so much heat, so much cold. There's no king. And even if he's there, he's not capable of ruling. So king was responsible. And Srila Prabhupada says, it seems, and Prabhupada is so subtly humorous. He says, it seems to the time that Ugrasen Maharaj was ruling, that means almost only 5,000 years ago, only around 5,000 years back, a king was held responsible if there was any problem to the citizen. Now today, if someone goes and tells, you know, supposing someone picks up your vehicle, as they are saying, they pick it and tow it to the closest police station. You go to the president and complain. The president says, where am I involved? I'm in Delhi, you're in Bombay. I'm doing my business, you're going about your business. Why come to me? Go to the policeman. Isn't it? Today, generally, a person will say like that. Where am I involved, Baba? But previously, at least till 5,000 years ago, it was the responsibility of the king. Anyone could go and complain to the king, why is this happening with me in your kingdom? It should be a bona fide complaint, obviously. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada gives an understanding. He says, this Brahmana is a young Brahmana. His wife, he and his wife are quite young, and they are having the first issue, their first child, and the child dies. The Brahmana is wise Brahmana. He consults all the scriptures, he remembers all his teachings that he has done previously, and he has found hundreds of quotes in the Shastras, especially the Shastras which deal with the way of life in society. The Artha Shastras, the Niti Shastras, they specifically explain that if in a particular kingdom a son or an issue, a child, a girl child or a boy child, if a child dies in front of its parents, that means the parents are still alive and a child dies, that means the ruler is making a mistake. The king is committing something wrong. Because if there is a good ruler, this will never happen. So what to speak of today's times, when the kings authorize centers for abortion? Can we understand what type of governance is taking place? And this was only about 5,000 years ago, at least till 5,000 years ago, the king was still held responsible. So the Brahmana comes with his son and says, you Ugrasen Maharaj, you must be an enemy of the, you must be a Brahma Dvish, an enemy of the Brahmanas. Otherwise, why? Why would you allow my son to die? How can this event even take place? Because Shatadhyo. Because for a ruler to properly take the care of the comforts of his citizens, he has to be intelligent. But when one's intelligence is polluted, or one's intelligence is weak, and when does one's intelligence become weak? By shatta, by duplicity. When one has a duplicitous nature, the intelligence becomes weak. That intelligence cannot be dependent upon to make proper discrimination.
Therefore, one says, that person is duplicitous, we cannot depend on him.
So, shata dhiyo. So, therefore, your intelligence must have become weak.
Now, Ugrasen, a king's intelligence to be weak. How is that possible?
Lubdhasya. Because he's become greedy. Now he's become king, he wants things for himself.
So as soon as there is greed, one is no longer fit to be a king or a ruler.
Where does greed come from?
Vishaya atmanah. Because of attachment to material sense objects.
And therefore, he is not a kshatriya, he is a chhatrabandhava.
This person is simply a ruler in the guise of a ruler.
He is not a kshatriya.
Kshatra comes from the word shash. It means someone who can protect.
Shashadhatu.
Someone who's qualified to protect.
Kshatrabandhava is someone who has some connection with.
You know, Prime Minister has some connection. He has a son, maybe an adopted son.
May have some powers, but not the same powers as the Prime Minister.
So that is called a bandhava, a relation.
So, after lamenting in this way and accusing the king, the Brahmana goes back. Actually, he actually warns the other citizens. He says, citizens serving such a wicked king who takes pleasure in violence and cannot control his senses are doomed to suffer and be in constant misery.
I'll try to keep the flow, so just narrate.
In this way, the wise Brahmana spoke, expressed his lamentation. And then this Brahmana suffered the same tragedy with his second and third child. And every time he would come, he would bring the dead body of his child and put it at the doorstep of King Ugrasen's court. And each time his voice, the tenor would rise and he would accuse in a louder voice, this king is addicted to sense pleasure. This king likes violence. Otherwise, why should my sons die one after the other after the other? After the ninth son of the Brahmana had died and he had brought that ninth son, the dead body, to King Ugrasena's court, Arjuna, who was beside Lord Krishna at that time, he overheard his lamentation. And Arjuna addressed the Brahmana and said, my dear Brahmana, what is the matter? Is there no lowly member of the royal order here who can at least stand in front of the house of this Brahmana with a bow in hand and at least make a show that I am here to protect? Kya yahan par aisa bhi koi aadmi nahi hai kya?
Chakravarti Thakur says, Arjuna is looking at all the Kshatriyas there and saying, is there no one amongst you?
And who are there? The Yadavapatis are there. There's Balaram. There's Krishna. There's Aniruddha. There is Pradyumna. There's Shataki. Yuyudhan. All these personalities are there. Each one of them capable of destroying the universe with one arrow. And he says, is there not even one lowly member of the royal order here?
Chee.
That is not said here.
But previously they did not have to. Nowadays, whenever drama is done, you have to express yourself so grossly. But previously everything was subtle.
Like that. So he says, cha cha.
And so Arjuna says,
it appears as if all the Kshatriyas here are like Brahmanas idly engaged in fire sacrifices. So actually, the duty of the Brahmana is simply to do sacrifices and maintain religious principles that way. Even if they are very powerful, they are not supposed to protect themselves, because the duty of protection lies with the Kshatriyas. So he says, what is this? Kshatriyas are behaving like Brahmanas. What has happened here? In a kingdom wherein their Brahmanas lament over lost children, over lost wealth, or over lost wives, the rulers of such kingdoms are not really rulers, but they are imposters in the guise of rulers simply for the sake of getting remuneration, their monthly check. They are simply imposters. And then he turns to the Brahmana and says, oh my lord, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife. So actually the wife of the Brahman had also come. So many times she had also suffered. This time she came also. And she said, I cannot tolerate it. I also have to come. But the whole episode was so traumatic for her. She could just stand there piteously with tears in her eyes. My sons are dying one after the other. So the scene is very, very piteous here. So Arjuna turns and says, I will protect the progeny of you and your wife who are such distressed. And if I fail to keep this promise, I will enter fire for this sin, to atone for this sin of failing in my promise. So as soon as Arjuna, he saw that somehow or the other the Kshatriya order was being derided here, his nature of giving protection to others, it came to the fore, and he could not stop himself before declaring. And Krishna was like, you're sitting like that and thinking, what is this with Arjuna and fire? Although this pastime took place, but there are so many times Arjuna and fire are related and Krishna is always there. So here Arjuna is again declaring, I will enter fire. He's declaring here. And Krishna is saying, okay. He just keeps quiet. When the Brahmana hears this, he says, the Brahmana is, as it is mentioned, he is wise, he is learned. He does not underestimate the strength of Krishna or Balaram. He knows who they are. However, this entire episode is bewildering him. Especially when his sons are dying. Now this Brahman, you see in Vedic culture, especially culture where these principles are very well followed, a son, an issue is desired so that one can engage him in Krishna, him or her, a child is desired so that they can engage them in Krishna consciousness, and thus on the credit obtained by them, they also can attain the spiritual world. That is the only purpose that one wants a son. And it is for a householder to have a son is considered to be one of the duties of a householder, to have a child. So the only lamentation that this Brahmana was having within his heart is, I am not getting an opportunity to raise a child in Krishna consciousness. Or actually my opportunity is just, you know, it's going away from my hands. Once, twice, three times, four times, five times, six times, seven times, eight times, ninth. I mean, Krishna, you appear after the eighth, seventh one. Ninth. So, the Brahmana knew that something is happening and I am not able to understand. And therefore he says, neither Sankarshan nor Keshava, Lord Krishna, nor Pradyumna, the great bowman, nor the unequaled warrior Aniruddha could save my sons. How is it that you can naively claim such a feat which even the almighty lords of the universe have been not able to do? So indirectly saying, how is it possible that you can do something which even Krishna is not able to do, or Krishna is not doing at the moment? And therefore he says, you are naive. You are like a child
And a child's words are not taken very seriously. And therefore the Brahmana says, how is it that we can take you seriously? So Arjuna here has boldly declared, I will protect your progeny. All these Kshatriyas here, you know, in today's world, if this were happening in, you know, today's 2008, and if this was dramatized, then Arjuna would be saying something like, you should all wear bangles or something like that. Something equivalent to that. Sab koi chudiya pehen kar baith jao. Nowadays it doesn't work. Neither chudiya, you know, bangles are worn by many people. And today everyone is out working in the corporate world. There's not much differentiation. So Arjuna has boldly declared, and the Brahmana says, what? A childlike words of yours? How can I even trust that? So Arjuna feels, this is not good. He's doubting my words. So he says, I am not Krishna, definitely. Nor I am Sankarshan Balaram. Nor for that matter am I Aniruddha Krishna's son, or Pradyumna Krishna's son, or Aniruddha, his grandson. I am Arjun, the wielder of the Gandiva bow. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Arjuna picked up his bow and said, here, this is the bow. This is the Gandiv. So maybe Krishna and Sankarshan, you may have faith in them, but don't underestimate me. A class of its own. I am in a class of my own. I am Arjun. Don't minimize my abilities, for they have been able to satisfy Lord Shiva himself, O dear Brahmana. Before this, Arjuna had a battle with Lord Shiva when he came as a Kirat, a hunter. And Arjuna was also hunting. There was a wild boar in a particular territory, and people were very much disturbed by this boar. So Arjuna declared to them, I will protect you. He took his Gandiva and ran after the boar, and he shot an arrow. And when he went towards the boar, he found that the boar had two arrows in him. Which one killed the boar? Who can claim the trophy? And there came this Kirat, and he said, that is my bow. I hit first. He said, I hit first. So the only way they could resolve is, let's have a duel. That is how Kshatriyas, they always resolve their battle. You know, like sometimes people, they resolve battles, let's have a contest. So for Kshatriyas, contest means let's have a duel. Sometimes in a duel, one dies. Like that. So they had a fight, and none could defeat the other. At that moment, the Kirat, he became so happy. He said, stop, I am happy with you. And Arjuna is thinking, you? Who are you? But he's a very intelligent person. He knows even someone like this, who is of unequaled prowess, says like that, one should listen. So he said, please, who are you? He said, I am Shiva. And he revealed himself as a glorious Lord Shiv, Shankar. And he said, I will teach you the science of using my own weapon, Pashupat. And he gave him the Pashupat weapon. So he says, I am that Arjuna. This is the same Gandiv. It could satisfy Lord Shiva. So don't underestimate me, please. Oh, my dear Brahmana. Please don't minimize my abilities. I may not be either of these personalities that you have mentioned, but I am Arjun. I will bring back your sons, oh, my dear Lord, my master. Even if I have to defeat death himself in battle. A loud claim. But not a vacant one. Arjuna had defeated many of the demigods previously to get their weapons, to get the knowledge of their weapons from them. He was confident that with his prowess and with Krishna behind him, he would be able to defeat death itself. However, at this point of time, we have to notice that Arjuna never turned to Krishna and asked him, Krishna, should I? However, within his heart, he always had faith in Krishna. He always depended on Krishna. So sometimes, it is good. Actually, it is always good to have faith in Krishna within our heart. But if circumstances do not allow us to express it, then maybe we are not to express it. But Arjuna was not in a position like that. He could have easily expressed his faith in Krishna. But this time he takes a stance that I will protect. Within his heart he has faith in Krishna. So I'll bring him back from death itself. I'll defeat death in battle. When the Brahmana heard these words, he became convinced, Are Babare, till now no one has spoken like this to me. Neither Ram here nor Keshav, they never said we'll defeat death in battle. 9 times I've come here. This person, kush to dam hai. There is some substance in what he says. So being thus convinced by Arjuna, the wise Brahman, he went back home, being satisfied, hearing the declaration by Arjuna of his prowess. Arjuna decided to stay in Dwarka itself for the next 1 year, because it takes normally around 9 to 10 months for a child to be born. So the next 1 year he stayed in Dwarka. Or Chakravarti Thakur says, maybe he went to Hastinapur and when the time came, he came back. So the Brahmana's wife again, she was about to give birth, and at that time, the Brahmana ran to Arjuna and begged him in great anxiety, please, please protect my child. And Arjuna got up, touched sanctified water, offered obeisances to Lord Shiva, Maheshwar. He remembered and recollected all the incantations and mantras for his celestial weapons and strung his Gandiv. You see, sometimes after seeing these episodes of Ramayana and all this, you know, the sellers outside, they start selling all these bows and arrows and people buy for their children, and then there are incidences of people becoming blind. Reports are there. Another person turns blind in one eye. On the newspaper reports. And then comments like, this series should be stopped and this seller should be banned. So many comments come. What do you think? Aaj tak. Previously, when the Kshatriyas would have their bows and arrows, bowmen, they would always unstring their bow. And every time they had to take their bow, they had to string it up again. For the simple reason, if an unqualified person picked it up, you don't know where it would hit. And another reason, these bows are very strong. You try to string it, you may yourself be flung by the reflex, you know. Because they are elastic in nature. You try to pull it down and string it and you get flung. So disasters can happen in many ways. So they used to keep it unstrung. And when a time would come, they would string it again. But they were so nippon, they were so dexterous, they were so expert in doing it. Within a moment, in a fraction of a moment, they could do it. So immediately strung it. It is pointed out that Arjuna offered obeisances to Lord Shiva. Why not Lord Krishna? So Prabhupada, he brings out another one important point. He says, this is a way a person gets attracted to the worship of demigods. He thinks, Kamaisteste ritagyana prapadyante anya devata. I have a desire. I have already given a proclamation. I have to keep my vow. Who will help me? Lord Shiva, the other demigods. Why? Because Krishna did not help. 8 issues, he was just sitting there. So who can help me? So he Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book, he brings out this a fear that someone has. Maybe this time I should worship also Ganesh, you know. Who knows? After all, scriptures say you can worship Ganesh. Or maybe I can worship Durga. Navratri is coming. After all, Durga is a sister of Krishna. You know, but ultimately, what is a worship? It is what is motivated by some hidden desire which we cannot bring in front of Krishna. Because we have heard, Krishna only supplies desires which one needs, not what one wants. And sometimes want becomes greater than need. Isn't it? A want may become a greater than a need. So, he played to Lord Shiva. He offered him obeisances. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, that Arjuna had already seen that this Brahman has lost faith in all the Kshatriyas, including Shankarshan and Krishna. So very tactfully, he avoided offering direct obeisances to Krishna, but within his mind he did so. Otherwise, Brahmana has to get confidence. If the Brahmana sees that Arjuna gets up and says, Om Krishnaya Namaha, he says, you stay here only. Already I have experienced what happens 8 times, 9 times. The 10th time, I don't want to experience this. So to give him faith, yes. Okay, so Om Shivaya Namaha, and then he goes. Picks up his bow and goes. And what does Arjuna do? Just see. Arjuna fences in the whole house where the birth is going to take place by shooting arrows attached to various powerful missiles. They were like loaded bombs. You touch them, boom. You know, sometimes you wonder, what are these shooting arrows? You know, are they like the arrows we shoot? Sometimes we make them out of this coconut. You know? Or at the most, what are these arrows? We go to this museum and we see the Nizam's bow and arrow. Just some, how many arrows can one shoot to cover a whole house? How? That is the prowess of Arjun. And Arjun, and a warrior never wants to lose his arrows unnecessarily, because arrows are not easily got. So when he fences in the whole house, he means business. And they are attached to different missiles. Anti-handling missiles, sound missiles. You know, some missiles that are attached, you make a sound and they burst. Some missiles are attached to put light on them and they burst. Like that. So he had protected the whole house in this way. Thus the great son of Pritha, Partha, he constructed a cage of arrows all around the house, upwards, downwards and sideways, and himself is stood in front of the door, expecting death to come. Soon the Brahmana's wife gave birth. Everyone could hear, ah, a child is born. And then suddenly the crying stopped, and in front of the Brahmana's eyes, his son vanished into the air. Previously, at least he was there, the body was there. This time. So interesting, these fast times, they are so intricate. The sun vanished into the air. And to Arjuna's surprise, all his arrows vanished. And Arjuna was, he was looking for all sorts of UFOs to come, nothing came. Everything vanished. And there, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, maybe Chakravarti Thakur says, the Brahmana was living right next to Krishna's palace. Now Krishna has 16,100 palaces, which one I don't know. But some palace he was living close. He was living in all palaces. So one of these palaces was close to the Brahmana. And Krishna was looking and taking, ah, achha, now this is happening. Okay, okay. You know, it was like Krishna had put on this channel, Arjuna channel. Let us see, live telecast. And Arjuna is bewildered there. All my arrows gone. The child has vanished. No dead body also. No crying coming. What's happening here? And the Brahmana right in front of Krishna, he started chastising Arjuna and deriding him. He said, how foolish was I to put my faith in the braggings of a eunuch? Now, a eunuch means a person who does not know whether he is a man or a woman. A man is supposed to have prowess. A woman also has certain capabilities. Like a woman can give birth and the man can provide the seed for birth. A eunuch knows he is incapable of doing both. So when a person is addressed as a eunuch, it means you are totally incapable of doing anything. And to address Arjun, who has a Gandiva still in his hand, Ramana said, and this shows also Arjun's qualification, that he could control himself. He was so sense-controlled. How could I put my faith in the braggings of a eunuch? Anirudh, Pradyumna, Ram, Keshav, none of them could save a son, save my son. Now if they can't save anyone, who can possibly save them? Shame. To hell with the liar Arjun. To hell with this braggart's bow. To hell with everything that he has claimed. He is so foolish that he has deluded himself into thinking that he can bring back a person whom destiny has taken away. These are such powerful messages. Dhik Arjunam Mrishadisham, Mrishavadam. Dhik Atma Shlag, you know. Dhanuhu. This person, he is vainly glorifying himself. Atma Shlagino. Arjun glorified. I am Arjun. Atma Shlagino, who's just vainly glorifies. So, the Brahmana in this way, and again the word is used, wise and learned Brahmana, was, you know, it was as if Brahmanas generally, their duty is six. Two of them is, they accept and they shower gifts. Dana pratigraha. So it was as if you are showering a gift. But what was this gift? This gift was deridement. You find, you liar, you braggart, you foolish person. And as Arjuna was hearing all these insults, he chanted a mantra, an incantation, that immediately took him to Samyamani, the abode of Yamaraj, the god of death. He said, if he's dead, he must be here. You know, just like if your vehicle is here, not here, you have to go to Tardev police station. Or this, you know, Nana Chowk, there is, they keep it there. You know, or kidhar ja sakta hai. So if a person dies, where does he go? Yamalok. So he went, Samyamani in the south. Not finding the sun there, he went to the north, to the abode of the moon god. Then he went to the east, to Indra's loka. Then he went to the west, to the loka of Varuna Dev. Not finding him there, he went to the northwest, Vayu. Not finding there, he went to southeast, Agni. Not finding there, he went to northwest. Sorry, southwest, Nairitya. So he covered all the directions where the principal demigods are there. But he did not find the sun anywhere. Arjun did not go to northeast, the abode of Shiva, because he had just asked blessings of Shiva. He said, Shiva will not do something like this. So he did not go to the northeast. Finding the Brahmana's son to be nowhere, Arjuna finally decided to enter the sacred fire. This is very interesting. People even in today's times want to enter fire. But their fire is either kerosene fire, tire fire. But when the scriptures describe someone entering fire, it is the sacred fire, born from incantations and mantras, because it is meant for a higher purpose. So Arjuna was ready to enter fire, and as he was about to do so, Krishna stopped him and said, "Oh Arjun, I will show you the Brahmana's sons. Please don't despise yourself like this." Now everyone, even us, will be thinking, what are you doing? Where were you up till now? He's running everywhere. And finally, when he's about to enter fire, you stop him. You know, generally it happens like that. You know, sometimes people, kab tak? I mean, don't see the serial, but till when? Till when are we going to be tested? So there, the fire, and he's about to enter. He says, stop. I will show you the Brahma. Show you. I've searched everywhere. If you knew already, why didn't you just pass me a note? I mean, nobody would accuse me of copying. You could send me a note or something. I'll show you the Brahma. Don't despise yourself like this. So Krishna's thinking, says Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that if he allows Arjuna to enter fire, and if Arjuna gives up his body like this, it will be blemish on himself. Why? Because in the future he is going to declare through Arjuna, my devotee never perishes. So he says, stop. I will show you this sense. Then Arjuna is saying, what about all these people? They are all criticizing us. Just see, this Brahmana has been shouting at the top of the voice. And because I had made the claim, actually the whole of Dwarka is here, and those who are not here are watching on television, live telecast. Even in Kali Yuga, 5,000 years from now, everyone in Radha Gopinath Mandir is watching this scene through the translation of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're all criticizing us. What about them? Krishna says, the same people who are criticizing us is very soon. Glorify both of us. Don't you worry. Arjuna says, all right. So Krishna asks Arjuna to come on his own divine chariot. And the two sakhas, the two friends, they proceed towards the west. Now Krishna could have proceeded in any direction. Going towards the west does not mean anything. Please. From tomorrow onwards, otherwise we'll all start proceeding towards the west. You know, everything. And I'll tell you why. Because what they did could have been done in any direction. They had to take some direction. This time they took west. That's all. The chariot on which Krishna and Arjuna were there, it crossed over the middle universe comprising of the seven islands with its seven oceans and seven principal mountains. That is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Please read it sometimes. So nice. It gives the entire geography of this universe. And then it passed beyond the lok-alok boundary and entered the vast region of dense darkness. So there is the universe, there is a lower universe, our existence, there is a middle universe, there is different planets, and there is the outer universe or the outer shell of the universe. It is dark, intense darkness. I mean, you cannot even imagine what such darkness is. And it's a vast region, as if having no end. Because it is made up of the eight coverings of the universe. The five gross elements and the three subtle elements. Each one, the first covering, the covering of the earth in the outer universe, the shell, its distance is the total diameter of the middle and the lower universe. That is the diameter of the first shell. The second shell is two times this diameter. The third shell is three times this diameter. Please imagine what is the dense darkness like. So Lok-alok mountain is that mountain which bifurcates the universe into light and darkness. The region of light is because the sun is there. But these mountains are so high. These peaks are so high that even the sun's rays cannot go beyond them. And therefore, Alok Chetra, or a territory of darkness. And when the horses that are pulling the chariot went into this territory of intense darkness, which was extending from primeval matter itself, the Pradhan, they lost their way. Shaibya, Sugriva, Megha Pushpa, Balahaka, these four horses of Krishna, lost their way. They were knowing, they do not know which direction to go in. Question raised is, Krishna's horses, Krishna's divine chariot, Krishna is a divine personality. If they lose the way, what about us? If we follow Krishna, and if Krishna's horses lose the way, how is it possible? Because Krishna's horses are not ordinary. They can never lose their way by the darkness of this material universe. So the reason given is, because Krishna was playing the role of a human being. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says Krishna could have said, all right, sons, come back. And all the sons could have come back. But then, all of us would have said, all right, get it done. Yadyat acharati shreshtha. We would have always said, Krishna did like this, we'll also do like this. Prabhu, get this. Prabhu, do that. So because Krishna was playing the role of a human being, a civilized human being, he wanted to show that unless and until we make endeavor, we can never get the results. We have to make endeavor. We have to sincerely chant and chant the rounds, do our sadhana, then we'll get the result. Even if Krishna's mercy is there, we have to make endeavor to get that mercy. Hence he went on the chariot all the way. And his horses similarly acted as if we don't know where to go. So Krishna, the master of all mystics, he sent forth his Sudarshan Chakra in front of the chariot, blazing like a thousand suns. And the horse is like, hi Sudarshan. Friends, no? Sudarshan like, don't worry, I am here. It's nice to have in the darkness if you find some friends. It's good, right? Especially a friend like Sudarshan. So blazing, and explained, The blazing Sudarshan Chakra penetrated through the dense darkness just as an arrow shot from Ram's bow cuts the enemy ranks, the enemy soldiers. The dense darkness of oblivion is just obliterated by Sudarshan. There's Akashvani again. So, following this brilliant Sudarshan, just a small comment. Sudarshan means that which gives perfect vision, good vision, auspicious vision. Those are the instructions of the spiritual master. Even if we are with Krishna, it does not mean the spiritual master can be given up or his instructions can be given up. Because only by the guiding light of the instructions of the spiritual master can one constantly remain surrendered unto Krishna. So that is Sudarshan. The instructions of the spiritual master, of a liberated soul, the guidance. So following the Sudarshan, they crossed the region of dense darkness and suddenly there was brilliant light, effulgence of the all-pervasive Brahma Jyoti. Seeing this glaring effulgence, Arjuna's eyes shut because he was feeling pain. It's so interesting. Thousands, like thousands of suns. Sudarshan disk is there and Arjuna was just, and then this brilliance and he could not see it. Isn't it? Because devotees want to see the personal form of Krishna. The Brahma Jyoti is appreciable. But much more appreciable is Hiranmayana Patrena. Please remove this effulgence and please let us serve you by seeing your personal form. So the eyes shut. And then they entered a reservoir, a body of water, which was resplendent with high waves, being churned by turbulent and mighty winds of brilliant effulgence. And in the center of that ocean, Arjuna saw such an amazing palace. He had never seen anything as radiant ever in his life. And to top it all, the radiance of the palace was much magnified by thousands of ornamental pillars bedecked with brilliant jewels and gems. And then within that palace, he saw the huge, awe-inspiring and fearsome form of the serpent Anantashesh, who was appearing so brilliant, especially because of the jewels that were on his thousands of hoods and they being reflected by his two eyes, which were fearsome to look at. Seeing this huge form of Anantashesh with thousands of arms, Arjuna was astonished. His feature was white like Mount Kailash, and the necks and tongues were deep, dark blue. Please do a painting if you get time. Let there be an intense white background and put some blue, not navy blue, this blue, but actually blue blotches on it. It looks beautiful. The contrast is so amazing. That is being described here. And then Arjun saw the omnipotent and omnipresent Lord of all the masters of the worlds, Mahavishnu, sitting at ease on the bed of Anantashesh. His color, the body complexion, was bluish like a dense, freshly formed rain cloud. He was wearing a beautiful yellow garment. His face appeared brilliant, smiling. His broad eyes were attractive. He had the most handsome 8 arms, long extending up to his knees. Profuse hair were falling down in curling locks against his cheeks, brilliant on all sides by the effulgence which was reflected from the cluster of ornaments on his crown and his earrings. Decorated by the beautiful Kaustubha Mani on his neck, wearing the Shrivatsa on his chest and garland of forest flowers called the Vaijayanti The Lord was served on all sides by personal attendants like Nanda and Sunanda, by his chakra and other weapons and personified forms, and his potencies like Shri, Kirti, Aja, and Pushti, and all of his various mystic powers. Mahavishnu. It was like a big boss sitting with all his henchmen there. You know, supposing you are invited by the zamindar, local lord, you don't find him alone. You find his right-hand man, left-hand man, someone who's pressing his legs. So here was Lord Vishnu in all his opulence. Just imagine all the mystical powers there. All the Ashta Siddhi and the Riddhis there. Sunanda and Nanda are not ordinary servants, you know. Powerful people. Arjuna was like, oh my God. This whole experience is bewildering. Dense darkness, brilliant effulgence. I saw palace like this huge snake, and this person, so huge, it was as if his size was boundless. And Krishna comes in front of him and says, Namo Namaha. And Bhagavatam explains, he offers obeisances to himself, to Mahavishnu. And why does he do so? Because he sees Arjuna is so bewildered by this whole thing. He's so astonished. He's standing dumbstruck there. Krishna goes like this, and Arjuna looks at Krishna and goes like this. He also offers obeisance, and Krishna says, yes, that is right. This is what you should do when you come in front of a great personality. Join your palms and say, Hare Krishna. So they bowed down in front of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu looked at them and he smiled. Just imagine this Lord who is sitting on this thousand-headed. Thousand is just to give a figure. Serpent. And he has his arms, eight arms, and he smiles. How big his smile must be? Actually, literally, how big his smile must be? And a small smile can relieve one of all fatigue and fear. This big smile, Arjuna says, ah, everything is all right. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, Krishna, Mahavishnu smiled because he was thinking, what is this Krishna? Now I have to explain to Arjuna that I am superior to you. Although you know, I know, and everyone knows, even the people in Radha Gopinath Mandir know that I am your expansion. But Arjuna has come here seeking solace, so I have to explain, and I am going to, in front of Arjuna, your devotee, I am going to establish that I am not different from you, and my superiority, although my very words will carry the meaning that you are superior in your character, in your beauty, and your activities. You are the superior person. Just see how clever I am. Mahavishnu is like a small child in front of the father. Although Krishna appears to be small, here, at least in literally height, and Mahavishnu appears big. Mahavishnu is saying, Papa, see how clever I am. Because it says, see how I'm going to prove that I am all superior to you. You know, there was some song, no? Someone says, Bada Naam Karega. So something like that. So Mahavishnu is thinking, now I'm going to make a name for myself. I'm going to speak in such a way that it will be as if I am superior to Krishna. And there's a beautiful verse. Time is short. Gaurgopal Prabhu will be speaking after this. Within 5-10 minutes, I'll finish. It describes that I have brought you here only because I wanted to see you. Dvijatmaja me yuvayor didrikshuna. I wanted to have your darshan. Now, I know why you have appeared, to establish religion and to kill the demons. You dispatch them fast, kill them fast and come back to me. In other words, send them back to me. You accompany them, because otherwise how will the demons get liberated? They are following the long path. Their long path goes through here. So if you come back, you know, mera admi hai, to jaldi pass kar denge passport. Go ahead, otherwise the line is long. There are so many demons who are waiting for liberation in Mahavishnu Lok. So you please come back to me as fast as possible. And the internal reason is, I'll see you again. But now, and in a very solemn voice of grave authority, you said, although all your desires are fulfilled by themselves, you do not need anything. You're self-satisfied still for people in general, for benefiting them. Continue existing as Nar and Narayan and establish religious principles of behavior. Krishna and Arjun, they accepted his words, his instructions by chanting Om. And then Mahavishnu offered them all the 9 sons. They took the sons and went back the same way that they had come. And then they offered the sons to the Brahmana again. And the Bhagavatam translation explains that the sons were in the same infant body. Otherwise the Brahmana will say, exchange kar laya. You know, it is a possibility. I do not recognize. How am I sure these are my sames? These are my sons. So the same infant body, the sons were brought. And Srila Prabhupada says, they were of due age. Duly they grew up in their age. Because 10 saal pehle mara tha na. Almost 10 years back, the first son has died. Every year one son died. So 10 sons immediately come. There could be problem for the Brahmani also to raise. So Srila Prabhupada makes the comment that in the Krishna book he says, they are all duly grown up. So 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. Like that. Now Arjun, he has seen all this and he has come back to Dwarka and he is totally amazed by this experience. Everyone is asking him, please, what happened with your world tour, you know, universe tour? Please describe. But Arjun is sitting amazed because for some days, he just could not speak to anyone. Anyone would ask him, Arjun would say, I just cannot explain. It's so amazing. I just cannot explain. And is explained, Nishame Vaishnavam Dhamma Partha Parama Vismita Yat Kinchid Paurusham Pungsam Mene Krishna Anukampitam. He's amazed because something is niggling him. There's some doubt in his mind. He says, Arjun, I declared I will protect. But death cheated me. I could not protect. Who am I? I am simply Arjun, not the wielder of the Gandivabo, but Arjun, a living entity, a mere mortal. By Krishna's grace, I went to the land of immortal beings. I went to the land of the original personality of Godhead Mahavishnu. Because Arjun was thinking, Krishna is my friend. I mean, he is God, all right, but he's my friend. But that is God. That is actually God. And Mahavishnu also declared like that. You who are my expansions, which actually meant, actually I am your expansion. The word jugglery is like that. You have appeared with all your expansions, including me. So, Arjuna is thinking, I went there, a mere mortal by the grace of Krishna. Krishna is so merciful. But, why did Mahavishnu say that he stole away the Brahmana's sons because he wanted to see me and Krishna? Now, what is not possible for the omnipresent and omnipotent Lord to do? He could have seen us anytime. Why did he say that he was wanting to see us? लेकिन ये बड़े लोगों कुछ कहना नहीं है, ना सनकी होते हैं कभी कभी, यू नो पीपल हु हैव ग्रेट पावर समटाइम्स यू नो यू नेवर अंडरस्टैंड व्हाई दे बिहेव इन अ पर्टिकुलर वे. सो मे बी ही हैज दिस टेम्पररी विम, यू नो, सम टेम्पररी डिजायर दैट आई वांट टू सी देम. हो सकता है भाई, ब्रिंग हिम, कम हियर. सो मे बी दैट इज पॉसिबल, दैट मे बी एक्सप्लेन्स इट. बट देन this is not some ordinary living entity. This is not some ordinary personality of Godhead. This is Mahavishnu. When he said, I wanted to see you, he said, Daivatmaja, Dvijatmaja me yuvayur, I wanted to see you, and therefore, Didrikshuna. Didrikshuna means, it does not appear to be that he had a temporary whim. Because Didrikshata would mean a temporary desire. I was just lying here and suddenly I desired I should see you and therefore I did this. That is not possible because he says Didrikshuna, which means that I have had this desire for a long, long time. Mahavishnu for a long time wants to see Krishna and me also. But if he is all pervasive and all powerful, why couldn't he fulfill his desire? Kuch to problem hai. So what could be the problem? He is a Supreme Lord. Krishna stays in Dwarka. And he says, isn't it, for a long time, this is too much. I cannot understand this. Maybe he had a permanent desire. You know, sometimes when you don't understand something, you say, shayad ho gaya hoga. So ultimately, Arjuna concludes, maybe he had a permanent desire, maybe a desire for a long time. Who knows? But then a third doubt came in his mind. Now, if this is Mahavishnu, he is supposed to be Namo Brahmanya Devaya, one who gives protection and all pleasure to the Brahmanas. But here, 9 times in a row, he troubled this Brahmana. Now, why would Mahavishnu trouble a Brahmana? Because maybe without troubling a Brahmana, it was not possible to see Krishna. Oh, this is interesting. So he goes to do an act like this when Krishna's nature, Mahavishnu's nature is to protect Brahmanas, he troubles a Brahmana, which means that he had this intense desire. Now, if he had such an intense desire, why steal the Brahmana's sons? Why commit an act like that? Why not come to Dwarka and see Krishna? Or forget coming to Dwarka. Mahavishnu does not, he is all pervasive, he knows everything. Couldn't he see Krishna in Dwarka? You know, like we have 100 channels, we can see anything anywhere. Mahavishnu must be having so many channels. Right? So couldn't he see Krishna in Dwarka? So why steal the Brahmana's sons? So that means it is possible that he could not see Krishna in Dwarka, which means that Krishna is not seen by everyone. Are? Ye kaise ho sakta hai? Krishna is seen by the panwala and the telwala in Dwarka. Krishna is seen by the betel nut seller and the oil seller. You know, when you want to say something which is really ki, are, tel wala bhi kar sakta hai, tum nahi kar sakte kya? Paan wala bhi janta hai, tum nahi jante kya? So Vishnu Chakravarti was saying that Krishna is seen by the paan wala and the tel wala, the betel nut seller and the oil seller of Dwarka, and Mahavishnu cannot see him. Theek hai. Ye bhi baat samajh mein aagi. Maybe Mahavishnu cannot see him. But then Mahavishnu can come to Dwarka and see him. Maybe channel garbad hai. You know, telecast ho nahi raha hoga. Telecast must not be going on. The wire must be cut somewhere. So he can come to Dwarka and see. Anyways, he was coming to Dwarka every time. No. He was stealing the Brahmana's sons. That means he was coming and stealing them. So why didn't he come to Dwarka and see Krishna there? Because without Krishna's permission, even if you come to Dwarka, you cannot see him. Wow. This doubt, series of questions is turning very interesting. Arjuna gets really excited. This is some world class mystery I'm going to solve here. He's getting excited. So, but that means only way that Mahavishnu could have seen Krishna is by stealing the sons, because he knows Krishna will do anything to protect the Brahmanas. So Krishna protects the Brahmanas and will do anything to protect them. And Mahavishnu, to see Krishna, will even break the principle of protecting Brahmanas. So who's greater? Ah, my Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not Mahavishnu. And as soon as this comes, Arjuna just gets up. He was sitting there. He gets up and runs to Krishna and says, Krishna, this is what I've realized. Please hear. Krishna, as a super soul, knows already. But then he says, all right, speak. And then he narrates everything. Is it true? Krishna says, yes, it is true. Pehle kyun nahi bataya? Arjuna is thinking, you really are the Supreme Personality of God, and now I understood. So herein, through this pastime, it is established specifically at the end, the Ashray Tattva. Who is the Ashray Tattva? Krishna, the son of Yashodamai and Nanda Maharaj. That Krishna who appeared in the jailhouse as a son of Devaki, Vasudev. That Shyam Sundar is the Ashray Tattva. So to conclude the entire episode, because then the 11th canto begins. This is so very important. Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, is the only shelter. He is the master of all mystical powers. He actually loves his devotees, protects them, can do anything for their sake. In fact, there is another episode which I should mention. So when Arjuna, he mentions it and Krishna agrees, so Arjuna says, so I am correct, no, in my analysis? To protect the Brahmanas and the Brahmana's son, you actually went and got all the sons from Mahavishnu? Krishna says, no. The only reason I went to get back the sons from Mahavishnu is to protect you. Because you are going to enter fire. If I wanted to get back the sons, I would have got back the son pehla wicket girne ke baad. When the first son died, that time only I could have gone to Mahavishnu and said, hello, hi, bye, and come back. But when you wanted to enter fire, because you are not different from me, you are my anga, you are my dear devotee, that is when I decided to go. So this is Krishna. He performed so many miraculous pastimes. He appeared in this world for the sole reason of attracting our hearts. We should feel so grateful unto Krishna that he appeared in such a way, and he manifested so many pastimes. This is just one of the innumerable pastimes this Krishna performed. Shukdev Maharaj says, Krishna married 16,108 wives and gave them 16,108 palaces and had 1,60,000 children. Or roundabouts, whatever, 1,16,108 children or something like that. And with each of them, he did so many activities and he performed fire sacrifices, acted just like a human being, so that we have something to speak about. So that we can, with our minds, visualize and realize his pastimes. He came and killed so many demons and established Yudhishthir Maharaj as the king of the whole world. A pious and religious king, his devotee, so that there would be peace and tranquility. So again, Krishna has come together and his purpose is the same. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharat abhyutthanam adharmasya tadat shri jamyaham. He has come to annihilate all the demonic tendencies that we have. He has come to protect our devotional creeper in every way imaginable to us and that which we have not thought of. Re-establish religious principles of soul worship unto him alone, and specifically to establish the dharma of the religion of the benefit that one gets from serving his devotees, like Arjun, like Srila Prabhupada. That dharma has come to establish. And he does that every time. Every time a devotee feels the need that Krishna should appear, Krishna appears and does it, as he has done today. Thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanande.